Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on scientific fraud when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And now they're teaching these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, in our public institutions. We've made them a part of our national psyche. You know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion, that's right, an abortion, arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. Now, there's at least one school left in America that's still teaching this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments and all 759 statutes, judgments, commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that you receive for their observance. You know, every law has a penalty. And we don't have to know what the penalty to a law is to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the law of God, the common law, natural law, or karma, or something else, it's automatic and it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happened to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4900. 67. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page, and you got it right there. All right, we've been reviewing a book here called Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith. And I think it's more faith, and I think I've demonstrated that. But there's one more gigantic scientific fraud that's been perpetrated upon all of us. And I thought we'd save it till last because it's the biggie. It's called the geologic column. Do you remember that? There's a series of lines and little caricatures of animals. And down at the bottom, toward the page number, you'll find where it says trilobites and crustaceans. And then up at the top, at the very top, is man after he's walked out of a series of monkeys. And this column is purported to be the history of evolution on planet Earth. And they start down here at the bottom, and it's got probably 30, 40, 50 maybe lines in it, and it's got ages and dates. Tells you this is 2 billion years old, and 1 billion, and 300 million, and 100 million, and 100,000, and so on up the line. And then in this column, they say, now the reason we know this is true is because there's fossils in here. And these dates that we're putting on here are put in here because of the fossils. So when you go ask the geologist, how does he know that this particular rock or layer of rock is 100 million years old? He says, well, because of the fossils that are in it. Okay, that's good. So now we go over to the paleontologist and we say, well, now, do you know what these little animals are? Well, yeah. Can you tell us which ones are the oldest? Yep, the ones, little clams down here at the bottom, they're the oldest. And the youngest are the mammals, which are up here on the top. And you ask him, how do you know that? And he says, well, the geologic column. And so you ask him, and you say, well, here's an animal here. How do you know how old this animal is? He says, well, because of the geologic column. And you say, well, where'd you get that date? And he says, well, from the geologist. Okay, so now you go over to the geologist, and you say, well, here's some Triassic strata here. And how do you know this Triassic strata is 10 million years old? And he says, well, because of the fossils that are in it. Are you getting the drift of this? The paleontologist, he gets the idea that this is this old because of the rock, and the guy that's the geologist who is interpreting the rock says he knows how old it is because of the fossil that's in it. Now, here's where it came from. It came from Lyell and Company, the early guys back in the early days of evolution, and they came up with this geologic column. This geologic column does not exist anywhere outside of the textbooks. There's no place on planet Earth where this geologic column exists. It's total myth. It never has existed, doesn't now, and ain't never going to be. Now, that's a fraud. Because when I went to school, they were teaching this geologic column, and they're still teaching it today. I mean, today. It was a lie then, it's a lie now, and it's going to be a lie in the future, but they're still teaching it. So let me tell you part of that story. Creationists believe that the geologic column was a direct result of a universal flood. It's called Noah's Flood, and it's recorded in the Bible. It's in Genesis chapter 6, 7, and 8. So if you want to know where the story is, that's where it's at. And even unbelieving geologists for hundreds of years supported that position until Darwin fouled the scientific nest. Now, many geologists tell us that the geologic column has been developing for hundreds of millions of years, building up to the level that we see today when a hill is cut away for a road or housing development. The geologic column is what scientists call the layers of sedimentary rock that are sometimes thousands of feet thick. According to their theory, the strata of sedimentation were the result of very slow erosion over past billions of years. And we are told that streams carried this dirt, dust, rocks, and animal remains down to the sea where they were laid out horizontally on the ocean bottom. Now, after long ages, during which the ocean beds were layered with stratum, those strata rose from the water to become dry lands, while the ocean waters that had previously covered that strata flooded other continents that slowly sank beneath the water. Those areas would themselves be raised in the ages to come, and those strata make up the geologic column according to the myth makers. So when I was going to high school, our ag teacher loaded us in the truck, hauled us up on the Wildcat up above Ferndale to about the 3,000-foot level, where we saw sandstone that had all kinds of shells in it, fossil shells. And he said, now, obviously, these clams and oysters lived in the ocean. Yeah, that's what we would conclude, just looking at it. And he said, now, these are up here at 3,000 feet. So at one time, the ocean had to be covering this little bit of real estate here. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And he said, now, the reason that it's up here at 3,000 feet is because over a long period, billions and billions of years, the continents sink down under the oceans, and then there's fossils laid down, and then they rise back up again. This has been going on, this alternating land mass going up and down and up and down over billions of years is what causes this. Okay? Now, that's the evolution story. Now, the creation story is a little simpler and straightforward. Long, long ago, and once upon a time, there was a period of time where God looked at men and he said, I'm tired of this and I'm going to destroy it. And he said, in 120 years, there's going to be a flood. And I'm going to flood the entire world and kill everybody and everything in it. And he said to Noah, the hero of the story now, he said, I want you to build an ark. And here's the way the ark is to be built. And I want you to take two of every kind of creature, seven if it's clean, two if it's unclean, load them in the ark to keep seed alive on the earth. And there was a great flood. And that great flood came and there were great waves and covered everything on the earth and killed everything on the planet and buried them. And that was the end of that. Okay. Both of these stories explain to us why at 3,000 feet above sea level we find these trilobites and clam shells and oyster shells and so on. Both stories tell you the story. Now, we don't know which one's true yet. Okay, we don't know which one is more logical. Now, based upon the physical evidence that we see, since nobody can testify to the flood, we don't have any witnesses here, we have to rely upon what we call evidence. Now, there's 188 rules of evidence that we use in law to arrive at a conclusion. So if we use the rules of evidence and we take a look at what we're physically looking at today and then we apply these rules, it'll be pretty close to telling us which is the more logical story. If you were sitting on a jury and one side comes in and says, well, it's evolution, geologic column, the other side comes in and says, no, it's catastrophism, and it's the biblical record of the universal flood, and then you're left here to decide, well, which one of these two parties coming into court here today is telling the truth, which is the more logical story? Who's got the best evidence? Now, evolutionists make much of this geologic column where the story goes, the fact of evolution is plainly seen. So I'm going to underline that word fact. They say, now see, the fact of evolution is plainly seen. This is the big gun that they haul up. Simple marine creatures are found on the bottom where it is assumed the oldest rocks are found. And I'm going to underline where it is assumed. You see, if you're looking at a cut in the highway, you'll see that there are layers and layers and layers of rock on top of each other. Now, when you dig into these layers of rock, you find a certain animals are in there. And almost invariably, not always, but almost invariably, you'll find that down at the bottom, you'll find the clams and the oysters. And up at the top, you'll find the lions and tigers. Now, the creationist comes along and he says, now, the reason that you see the shellfish down at the bottom is because when the flood came, they couldn't run away. And so they were stuck where they were and they were buried by the sediments generated by this worldwide flood. And the animals that could run the fastest ran to the highest ground, which was covered last. And that each one of these layers was laid down in its order. And that the oldest one in the geologic column is at the bottom. and that the newest one is at the top, the youngest one. The one that was laid down last is up on top. Now, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And the evolutionist, he tells you the same thing. He says, now the oldest strata is down here at the bottom, and the youngest strata is up here at the top. And again, that just makes all the sense in the world. You know, when you're looking, as you're driving your car and it goes through one of these cuts, and you're looking at these various layers, you know, you've all seen them, it just makes sense that the one that's down at the bottom was laid down before the one on the top. Now, whether this was a billion years in the laying down of the strata, or it was 150 days, we don't know. We weren't there. But everybody's in agreement that the oldest one is down at the bottom, and that the youngest one is up on the top. And the evolutionists in their geologic column will tell you that, and the creationists will tell you that, that based upon the stratigraphy laid down by the flood, that's where the common sense lies. Now, the plot thickens. Because there are some places, when you take a look at this geologic column, which the evolutionists now, let's use their argument. I don't want to put any words in their mouth, but they're the ones that say, see, this is this old. It's this many billions or this many millions or hundreds of millions of years old because of these fossils that are located in it. And so they have certain layers that they have named and then dated. And let's read some more of the story. Most geologists, after you take a look at this column, as you go up the column that allegedly reveals billions of years of time, the organisms get more complex. After all, the column is supposed to reveal the beginning of life and its progress finally to man. What the rocks of the column actually reveal is that evolutionists are dating rocks that were laid down very rapidly in a flood. Today, when we see stratigraphy being laid down, and you can see this in any flood today, I can remember down along the Eel River in Ferndale, California, when the river would flood, it would wash out the bank. And then you could look at the bank in the summertime after the water went down, and you could see layers. You know, there'd be gravel and then sand, and then there'd be dirt, and then some more sand and gravel and dirt, and it was laid down. Now, this is being laid down today. I mean, today, every time there's a flood up there, the various particles, that is sand and gravel and dirt, they sort out, the water sorts it out and lays it down in these layers. And then you can come back 10, 20, 30, 50 years later and you can see this. So it's a very common phenomenon laid down by floods. Well, the evolutionist isn't lying to you. He's telling you that the continent sank down below the ocean. Well, that's a pretty good sized flood, you know. If the North American continent were to sink down below the ocean level and the oceans covered the United States and Canada, you know, for a million years or a billion years, that would be a pretty sizable flood. So we're both of us talking about the same phenomenon. Everybody recognizes that these stratas are laid down by water. And the argument is over, well, is it over a long period of time, billions of years, or is it over a short period of time? No, that's where the basic argument lies. So let's read on a little further. Most geologists take the position that the condition of the Earth is a result of normal, recognized physical laws that have operated in a uniform way throughout time. That's called uniformitarianism. And it was discovered by a guy named Lyell. He's just the guy that came up with that back about 1832. Now, creationists believe that the condition of the Earth is clearly the result of a worldwide catastrophic flood. That's called catastrophism. So what we're dealing with is catastrophism versus uniformitarianism. Okay, and so you've got these two camps. You and I are sitting on the jury now. So one guy says, well, I'm a uniformitarian, and the other guy says, I'm a catastrophism guy. So scientists have arranged time into geologic ages, represented by different portions of the sedimentary strata found over most of the Earth. However, they never tell students that geologists admit there's no place on Earth where a complete record of the rocks is present. The complete geologic column only exists in textbooks. So write this down when you're talking to somebody. Can you tell me where on planet Earth this complete geologic time index is located? Is it in the Grand Canyon? Now that Grand Canyon's a mile deep and it's got strata from the bottom to the top all laid down. Okay. And then they tell us, well, at the bottom of the canyon is the oldest rock, and at the top of the canyon is the youngest rock. Well, that just makes all the sense in the world because the creationist says the same thing. He says, down here at the bottom is the oldest rock, and up here at the top is the youngest rock. Now, in all those rocks, there are fossils. And not quite, but almost invariably, you'll find that the shells, you know, that's the clams and oysters, are down at the bottom, and that the lions and tigers and man are up here at the top. Okay? Now, there's also dinosaurs in here and so on, and the geologists, you know, and paleontologists, they get together, and then they date these. They put time frames on. The creationist says this occurred about 4,400 years ago, about 2369 B.C. If you want a date to put on Noah's flood, the Bible tells you the date, 2369 B.C. And so it occurred over 1 year, and in about 150 days, this process was completed. So the rocks down at the bottom of the Grand Canyon are 150 days older than the rocks up at the top. How's that for a plan? All right. Now, dating these fossils comes into play. The Grand Canyon reveals more of the geologic column than any other place on Earth. But about 345 million years are missing. It has multi-layers of sedimentary rock, sometimes thousands of feet thick, loaded with fossils that impress students. But they're never told that out-of-place fossils are found throughout these various strata. Evolutionists never talk about that unless forced by pushy creationists. Now, this is the crazy part. Down at the bottom, where the oldest billion-year-old fossils are located, oftentimes in that type of rock, you will find mammals. Now, remember, according to the evolutionary theory, the mollusks, they developed first, and they evolved into fish, and then the fish evolved into this, that, and another thing, and pretty soon you had animals, and pretty soon dinosaurs, and then pretty soon birds, and then, you know, so on. Now, what the hell do you do when you find a bird fossil down here with these mollusks? They don't tell you about that. It doesn't fit. It's like that skeleton up in the Chicago Museum of Natural History in 1940, 14 feet. It didn't fit the evolutionary story, so they just removed it. And that's why I said, that's not science. That's propaganda. So if you read the Genesis flood, you can get more information about all of these anomalies. That's why I put the Genesis flood as being the top book. It's written by two guys named Whitcomb and Morris. Morris is a hydrologist, Whitcomb's a theologian. They teamed up and they took the evidence, that is all the scientific evidence, all of the various disciplines, and they put it together and they came up and they said, now the more logical story is that we've got a flood. Noah's flood makes better sense. And that's because all of the animals, that is the oysters and clams, along with the birds and the dinosaurs, along with all the mammals, were all alive at the same time. And the evolutionist comes along and says, no, they weren't. See, the mollusks came first, and we still have those. And then came the dinosaurs, or came the fishes, and then came the dinosaurs. And then out of the dinosaurs comes the birds, and then on up the line here until we get to man. Man comes last. Now, wait a minute. When you find birds down here in strata below the dinosaurs, then that tells you birds and dinosaurs. Well, now the evolutionist says the birds didn't exist until after the dinosaurs, but now we've got the birds living at the same time and before the dinosaurs. Now, what do you do with that? When you find that, you ignore that and you take it out of the textbooks. You don't tell students things like that. So what that is what we call spin. Now, that's not what we call a lie. It's not an actual lie. It's a constructive fraud. It's where we know better, but we're not going to tell you that part of the story. It's like a prosecuting attorney that knows that the defendant is innocent because of the DNA evidence that he has. But he does not present that evidence. He keeps it from the defense. This occurs, by the way, 30% of the time here in America when we're dealing with rape cases, because in every rape case, the defendant is pointed at by the victim and said, that's the man that raped me. But 30% of the time, that's false. It's not wrong all the time, just 30%. So of the people who were locked up in America for rape, fully 30% of them, about one out of three, is innocent. Furthermore, oftentimes prosecutors know they're innocent, but their job is to convict them, and that's what they're there to do. So they convict innocent people and throw them in jail. Is that dishonest? Is it morally bankrupt? Well, I would say that it is, but prosecutors don't. Or they wouldn't do it, would they? Now, evolutionists do not believe that keeping this evidence out of the textbooks is dishonest and immoral, do they? If they did, I think they would change their ways. Now, that's another reason why I say that this is a scientific fraud. It's been going on for a long time. And if you want to be able to identify those frauds, here's two books for you. The first one here, the one we're reviewing this week, called Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith. And then here I'm reading in, what is it, chapter 14, is the geologic column true? Chapter 14. And it's over here on page 193. And he goes through and he explains to you time after time after time. I said, I don't have the time to cover all these, you know, one at a time here, but I can tell you where the chapter in the book is, and that's where the story is located. Now, there's a second book. You want to have two witnesses, you know, at the mouth of two witnesses, or at the mouth of three witnesses, shall the matter be established. Then you want a book here which is called The Genesis Flood. It's The Biblical Record and Its Scientific Implications by John Whitcomb and Harry Morris, M-O-R-R-I-S. Both of them PhDs and THDs, and they got all the credentials. For copyrighted 1961. And you can get this book in Barnes & Noble. It's still in print. They keep printing them all the time. You can get it in paperback. Mine happens to be hardback, but you can get them in paperback. And I think they're as cheap as $10. If it cost you $110, you can't get better information than this. This, by the way, is a college textbook, a college-level textbook, where they use it in colleges that teach creation, you know, as opposed to evolution. But it's the other side of the story, and it's written in scientific language, and frankly, it is a little tough to read. I don't deny that. it's scientific, and it's a science textbook, and it's a college level science textbook, and it's got overthrust contact lines and all kinds of funny words in here. See if I endeavored and disciplines and heavenly firmament, geological, geologic. There's archaeologist and premises and presuppositions and obscurantism and so when I first read this book, I was in my about mid-20s, I'm probably 25 years old, and having been a product of the public schools, I had to take a dictionary, and every time I'd find one of these words, I'd underline it and go look it up in the dictionary, and then I would write in the margin what the definition of the word was. Well, by the time I got through about the first three chapters, I mean, I'm on page 97 looking at it here now. I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 words on page 97. I had to look them up. On page 96, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 more words I had to go look up. On page 95, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 words. On page 94, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 words, and so on. I mean, it was laborious to a kid, that had been sent to public school where I was I was handicapped. I'm still struggling from my public school education and my religious school education. I'm still struggling to overcome all of that false knowledge that they pumped into me. But I'm gaining on them. I'm gaining. All right. Now on this thing called dating these fossils. Remember, we go through these fossils and we go through this and we find that we've got fossils in the wrong strata. That they ignore. But there is another thingy over here that comes into play, which is called overthrusting. Overthrusting. Boy, these guys, they just don't give up, do they? And that's where, when we have fossils in rocks, you got this 1,000-foot thick body of strata called rock, and it's got the wrong fossils in it, they tell us, well, here's what happened. That rock is out of place because of an overthrust. And so what happened was, many years ago, millions and millions of years ago, the earth tilted down and that block of rock slipped off, and then another block of rock raised up. And this rock was shuffled in between these two, and that's why it's out of place. I kid you not, I'm not talking about the Bible now. I'm not telling you about some fairy tale out of the Bible. I'm telling you that's what they tell you here in the science textbooks called overthrusting, which we'll talk about when we come back. Mid-course reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, and click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org, the archives page. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse, we recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine or mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, overthrusting. This is another one of these scientific hoaxes. It's a fraud. It's as phony as a $3 bill, but hey, they present it with a straight face. Honest to God, they got a straight face when they make this. Listen, often thick strata are found to be in the wrong order. Strata that have an abundance of a particular fossil are identified as belonging to the era when the creature lived, according to the evolutionary theory. Now, these fossils found in abundance are known as index fossils. But if strata are found near the top of the column with these index fossils from the bottom of the column, geologists then have to explain how that can happen. So they call it overthrusting. Now, a good example of overthrust is in Glacier National Park, where a block of Precambrian limestone that is supposed to be 1 billion years old has been found on top of Cretaceous shale rock that is only 100 million years old. So we are expected to believe that this block of limestone that's 300 miles long, 25 miles wide, and over 2 miles thick moved 30 miles horizontally over the younger area by various unknown forces. And now this older rock sits on top of the younger formation. Now, if that could be proved, it can't, but if it could be proved, then it would demolish uniformitarianism because that geological activity is not taking place anywhere in the world today. See, uniformitarianism tells us that what we see going on today around us is what has always been going on around us, and what we're looking at here, that isn't happening. And evolutionists tell us the flood is an outrageous teaching. Yeah, that's right. They tell us that God, who brought about the flood, described it in Genesis 6, 7, 8. Now, that's preposterous. That's ridiculous. That could never happen. Now, it is true, worldwide floods aren't happening today, and God said he wasn't going to do that trick again. So, I guess that leaves us in the same boat with the evolutionists. But listen, listen to this. These guys are telling you that a 300-mile-long block of rock, 2 miles thick, that's 10,000 feet thick, 25 miles wide, moved 30 miles horizontally over the younger area? Huh? Hell, you know, that's something that you read in a Dell comic book. That isn't something that you read in a science textbook, is it? Oh, no, no. It's in your science textbooks today. Overthrusting. Dr. Clifford Burdick, consulting geologist, spoke very pointedly of the above overthrust. In order to get them the fossils in the right order, evolutionists proposed that a block of Earth's crust, 300 miles long, 25 miles wide, and 2 miles thick, 10,000. I mean, that thing's 10,000 feet thick, was turned upside down. If there was such movement, there are three criteria to look for. One is that there should be ground-up rock in between these two layers, like the upper and neither millstone. Another criteria is breccia, for example, broken-up rock fragments. Then there are slicken sides, gouge marks. Now, we spent years and efforts to find such evidences at the contact points in Glacier Park, and we have yet to find one single case of any contact point showing any of these three indices. And we are forced to say that the rocks in Glacier Park are in the same order in which they were laid down, not millions of years ago, but thousands of years ago. Even if they were laid down millions of years ago, this story about overthrusting over here to explain these index fossils, it's phony. I mean, you don't have to be real smart, you know, to figure that out. Now, you could be real deceived into believing it. I believe this crap because that's what I was taught. Then after I got to looking at it, I said, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. Now, you may not like the idea that there is a God or that there is a Noah's flood or something like that. I don't deny that. It's really the pits because I like adultery. If there's anything better than adultery, you tell me what it is. But, you know, we're running out of options here. You know, when you're looking at 2 mile thick pieces of rock 300 miles long, and this is one of the small stories. I got to tell you the big one here in a minute. 10,000 feet thick, 25 miles wide, 300 miles long, and these guys tell us this thing got flipped over to explain these index fossils being out of order so that we can maintain our fiction of this geologic column, which doesn't appear anywhere in the Earth's crust. It's only in textbooks. Huh? Now listen, you may not like Genesis 6, 7, and 8, but how do you like that story? Now if you can believe that, I mean, you know, that's comic book stuff. That's something that Superman does. Now, the geologist is saying that the physical evidence is not there for overthrusting. The massive layers of rock did not move out of place. He went on to say that the rock layers do not have the inner strength to withstand the massive pressure needed to push billions of tons of solid rock over the lower rocks. He says, it is incredible to me that evolutionists will hang on to the idea of thrust faults just to save evolutionary concepts. Now, that's another evolutionist. See? The evolutionists need to get their act together and create an intelligent story that makes sense. At least the biblical story makes sense. You can sit there and say, well, I find it hard to believe that there is a God that has lived forever. Hell, I don't know how to explain it. When somebody comes to me and says, I'm without beginning and without end, that's a realm of physics that's beyond my comprehension. When somebody says, I created the heavens and the earth and I did it in 6 days, that's something bigger and better than I can do. I'm not in that league. When somebody says he can fly a 747 from Miami to Los Angeles, that's out of my league also, and I'm a pilot. I mean, I can fly some airplanes, but I can't fly one of those. But I don't deny that somebody else can do it. You know, I don't sit here in my ignorance and say, well, just because I can't do something or I don't understand that, it can't be done and it's impossible. I don't know what a God could do. Hell, this may be just part of his overall capacity and ability. This may be something that he does on an odd Saturday afternoon. I don't know. I couldn't do it working night and day for 70 years, but I'm not of the opinion that I ought to deny it just because I don't understand it. It's like we were talking about yesterday. You know, just because you don't know what your tonsils are for doesn't mean that they're not there for something. Now, the guy that designed the Ford automobile, he knows why he put the dipstick in. He knows why he put the headlights on there. He knows why he makes recommendations like 90 weight oil in the gearbox, you know, the rear end. So just because you and I don't know, because we're not engineers, doesn't mean that it didn't happen or it's an impossibility. That's just nonsense. That's trying to argue, you know, from a negative, and that's crazy. Now, there's another part to the story. I said I'd tell you the story. Now I'm going to flip over here to a book called The Genesis Flood. I'm on page 190. Now, up here in the same general area, there's another overthrust. It's called the Lewis Overthrust Contact Line. The Lewis Overthrust Contact Line. This piece of real estate is bigger than that last one. See, that last one is a little one. It's 300 miles long, 25 miles wide, 10,000 feet. Listen, here's one here. It's 600,000 miles in its size. It covers 600,000 square miles. It's located up in Montana, Idaho, goes up into Canada, maybe North and South Dakota, no, Alberta, Saskatchewan. It's a big piece of real estate, 600,000 square miles. And then it's older than the strata that it's sitting on. Well, according to the geologic column. So the evolutionists had to come up with an excuse for that. And so they said, well, you see, this Lewis overthrust, it was overturned. And that's why you see it on top of. See, it was laid down earlier, but then there was this overthrusting. Now, 600,000 square miles, boys and girls, Montana's 114,000 square miles. We're talking about six states the size of Montana that were flipped upside down by natural processes under the theory of uniformitarianism that we're observing today. Can you tell me where six states are being overturned, turned upside down today? Can you point to that place on planet Earth? I mean, come on, children, let's wake up and smell the coffee here. We read this crap in our textbooks, and they've got pictures, and they've got four-color slides over here, but have you ever thought about that for a minute? Okay, now here's the kicker. I'm looking on page 190 of the Genesis Flood, and they've got a picture here with an arrow, and it's pointing to what they call the Lewis Overthrust Contact Line, and it's 1/16 to 1/8 of an inch thick, which lies between these two bodies of rock. Now, the logical conclusion would be the rock below the arrow was laid down first, and then the contact line, which is 1/8 of an inch thick, made up of clay, was laid down next. And then the Lewis overthrust rock, which is on top, was laid down third. I mean, that's kind of the logical way to look at it. But these guys are saying, no. The Lewis overthrust rock, see, was laid down first. And then the rock below the arrow and the 1/8 inch piece were laid down after this rock slid off, and then this other one rose up, and then like a deck of cards, we're going to slip it back in. Honest to God, do you believe that? Over a period, over a sized piece of real estate, six times the size of Montana? Okay, listen, I'm not here to argue with people. You know, some people believe in Mormonism. I don't argue with them. I'm not a Mormon, and I don't intend to become one. And they tell me that if I don't believe in Mormonism, I'm going right straight to hell. I don't believe that for a minute. There's only 12 million Mormons out there, and I find it hard to believe that you 12 million guys are going to end up saved, and the other 7 billion of us are all going to end up going to hell, including all of the maybe 1 or 2 trillion people that have been born before us, and that this whole program is just for you guys. Because, you see, the Baptists are telling you the same story. And then the Catholics, they tell you the same story. The better argument is the Catholics, at least they've got a billion people. They got a billion people going to heaven, all the rest of us are going to hell. Now, it has occurred to me, and I wanted to point this out to you, that these religious philosophers over here are entitled to their philosophies, and the evolutionary philosophers are entitled to their philosophies. If they believe that 600,000 square miles of rock, 10,000 feet thick, could get slid over another piece of rock and then folded back in like a card in a deck of cards with 1/8 of an inch of a powder clay comfortably placed in between them, and that occurred without any dislocation of that 1/8 of an inch of clay, and without any evidence of any of this rock being fractured and broken up, etc. You know, that's a faith. That's a religious faith that'll outdo all you Christians and all of you Muslims combined. I mean, these guys have a faith. They have belief. Put you people to shame. Now, I don't believe that either one of these stories is true. That's where I'm laying this down to. See, the religious guys over here, they don't follow the Bible. And they tell you the flood was local. I kid you not. They tell you the Grand Canyon is laid down by local floods. That all happened just slowly but surely over a long period of time. Which is as phony as a $3 bill. Just take a look at it and say, wow, that took a lot of water to gouge that out. A lot of water in a worldwide flood could do that. All the water that's run down the Colorado River for a billion years wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. And then you got the evolutionist guy over here. He's telling you these preposterous stories, you know, about overthrusts and geologic columns. And then you say, well, where is this? It's in the textbook. It's what we believe. And they tell you, we believe that because the alternative is unacceptable. Listen to the Lewis overthrust story. The almost perfectly horizontal nature of the Lewis overthrust contact line indicated by the arrow is revealed in this photograph. This photograph, by the way, is on page 190 of the Genesis Flood. There is certainly no apparent indication of any substantial amount of shearing distortion along the surface. Slight differential movements on the two sides of the bedding plane due to differences in the structural characteristics of shale and limestone appear, and they have caused some slight distortion, particularly opening up a clear-cut split along the contact. All along this contact line, for at least a half mile, a very thin 1/16 to 7/8 inch layer of shale. I got that one wrong. That's a 1/8. It's 1/16 inch to 1/8 inch layer of shale-like material made of fine clay is found adhering in some places to the upper, which is called Algonquian limestone, and in some to the underlying Cretaceous shales, which are lithologically quite distinct from the layer itself. It seems inconceivable that this very fine layer would have been left so perfectly intact if the limestone had actually been thrust over the shale, as the Lewis overthrust interpretation demands. Hey, you can't make this up. I mean, you know, if I walked into a room and I said, a piece of rock, a block of rock, 2 miles thick, 300 miles long, 25 miles wide, was laid down first, and the reason that we find it today on top of this rock, which is younger, is because it slid off and was slid back in by way of, you know, uniformitarianism, I think anybody would call to have somebody lock me up. I don't think that a madman could come up with that kind of an interpretation or that kind of a belief. To say that that's lunacy or insanity, I think, is an understatement. You can sit there and say that Genesis 6, 7, and 8 is preposterous. If you can believe this story, I mean, it's even dumber on a scale of 10 to 1. And here it is. It's in the book. Now, this Genesis Flood isn't very expensive in the paperback edition. I imagine in hardcover probably cost you $30. I think you can get this at Barnes & Noble, and it's worth every dollar. I mean, if this thing cost you $150, it would be worth every dollar. You could not get another book. This is a book that I rated, and I said at the time that I first reviewed it here on the air, I said, this is a 1 in 100 book. Now, for you truck drivers out there, you're going to have a problem reading this, and I don't deny it. But, hey, look, even a truck driver, you know, even us, and I'm an old-timey truck driver now, so, you know, don't think I'm putting you down. I went to public school. I'm a high school dropout. If I can read this book, by God, I think anybody can. I read 238 words a minute. I'm so damn slow, I'm an embarrassment to myself. I have to read from the back of the book to the front. If I didn't, I'd never get through with it. And so I picked it up, and I had to take a dictionary in order to translate some of these terms. I don't know why these guys do this, but they have to use these big words that none of the rest of us understand. I think that they do that to show us how smart they are. Well, hell, I never denied that they were smart to start, that they weren't smarter than I was to start with. But it isn't necessary to use these big words, you know, like geographically. That simply means terrain study. And geological, that means earth study. And anthropologically, that's a mankind study. Or mankind-wise. I mean, they could have put it in there, you know, that the study of mankind, as it relates to the universal flood, I think would help us a great deal. They couldn't use the word mankind. They had to use anthropologically. So, okay, so you're going to have to get a dictionary and look up anthropologically, and then you write over the top of anthropologically mankind-wise. And then you can read the sentence. It says, Bernard Rahm's two basic arguments against a mankind-wise universal flood really comes down to this. But in the original, it's Bernard Rahm's two basic arguments against an anthropologically universal flood come down to this. So I'm telling you, you're going to have to translate it. But once you get through about two or three chapters, and you'll get some of these big five-syllable double-jointed knee action words, in your brain, all of a sudden you can read the rest of the book, and boy, will it tell you a story. It'll tell you, I couldn't make this up. I'm not smart enough to make up this kind of crap. I don't have that kind of crap between my ears with which I could beguile you. It takes people smarter than me to do that. All right, so let me give you the books again so that before we run out of time here. The Genesis Flood is written by two guys. They're named Whitcomb and Morris. And if you just go into Barnes & Noble, I think you can get that one. You can get it from Brave New Bookstore. I'm pretty sure that they carry it, as I recall. And you can also get it from a used bookstore. Probably be a little cheaper if you go into the used bookstore to get it. So all you need is two things now in the used bookstore. The Genesis Flood by Whitcomb and Morris. They'll plug it into their computer, and they'll find your copy somewhere in the world. Brave New Bookstore, I think, has it. Barnes & Noble, I'm pretty sure, carries it. It's being published last time I heard. They got new editions of it out. That's how popular that is. Now, the other book that we've been reviewing this week is called Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith, written by Don Boyes. Now, this book is just full. This is what the book is written for, to expose these scientific frauds. And that's why I reviewed it, because he's got, not just the geologic column. And it's not just the Peking Man or the Nebraska Man or the Pulled-Down Man hoax. I mean, he's got them all. I mean, this guy, dozens and dozens of these frauds and hoaxes over here. When you see this, I mean, you're going to just be amazed. The guy's name is Don Boyes, B-O-Y-S, Don Boyes, Ph.D., the book Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith. Available at any of the above sources that I've given you, and I think that you will be well received and well satisfied with these two books. Hey, I'm out of time. I got to give you a final report here, a final reminder. And that is that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.